Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey everybody, it's Jacob here. This is episode 57 of the Daniel 3 podcast. This was originally streamed on January 16th, 2022. And this was a conversation with Clint Russell from the Liberty Lockdown podcast. My first conversation with him on my podcast, I had a little bit earlier, maybe like a few weeks prior, had a conversation with him on Josh Smith's show of Break the Cycle. And we kind of continued what we talked a little bit on Josh's show, kind of about, like, you know, how the ways in which the church has failed to be, overall pushing back against the lockdowns, and sort of how a lot of people who aren't Christians, such as Clint, were kind of looking to the church to maybe, you know, be a voice and to fill an important role in that fight against the expansion of tyranny, and the ways in which, you know, as the church fails to do things like that, it kind of hurts the church's witness. And so we had a conversation about that, and then just kind of in general, like, you know, how we can create a culture that loves liberty and make the fight something that isn't a chore, that isn't something we got to grit our teeth to do, but rather how we can make fighting authoritarianism something that, although the fight is hard and certainly has its ups and downs, something that is sustainable, because we can find ways to make it more enjoyable and create a culture that you know has people lifting each other up and supporting one another in our various efforts. So this was a great conversation. I hope you guys enjoy it. You know, as I've been mentioning over the last few episodes, you know, still working to get us caught up. I'm going to have to try to pick up the pace a little bit. Please be patient. And again, I feel like I'm going to obnoxiously be apologizing over the next month for the major lapse in the frequent episodes. But again, making efforts to get back to consistency here. I haven't made any pleas for money in a while. There's been no grifting. But, if you enjoy this content and you'd like to see more of it, you know, certainly one of the restraints on my time is, of course, just that, you know, other than my family and spending time with them, I have to work and provide for them. And, I have some money coming in from Patreon now. If you feel so inclined, even if you can just throw $5 a month towards the show, every little bit helps to free me up to do not only more episodes, but to, you know, have more time that I can invest into researching different subjects and just improving the quality of what I'm putting out there. I have a lot of ideas of content I want to do, but it involves me having to, you know, find time to prepare for it. You know, when I have these kind of episodes like I did with Clint, I don't need much prep. I'm just going to talk with Clint and we're going to riff off of each other. But I'd like to do more episodes like on Christian anarchists throughout history. There's a lot of really interesting figures, whether it be Leo Tolstoy, whether it be C.S. Lewis, whether it be Dorothy Day. You know, there's so many people that I could go and do like episodes where I explain their approach to Christian anarchism and kind of like their life experience and the influence they had on the church. And I think that would be, you know, good content to put out there as far as normalizing the idea of Christian anarchism. But, you know, I want to do episodes like that justice by making sure they're properly researched and prepared ahead of time. So, you know, and there's a lot of other ideas I have in my head. That's just one that I want to do first. So if you find value in what I do, and even if you just throw a few bucks a month towards me, if enough people do that, I'm hoping to hit a goal of about $200 a month from Patreon. If I can hit that and sustain it, that would really help out with my personal financial situation and allow me to just have that little bit of flexibility I need to kind of take this podcast to the next level. So if you want to do that, it's patreon.com/biblicalanarchy. And yeah, other than that, I appreciate all of you watching and listening rather, and enjoy this conversation with Clint. Good evening. I can't talk tonight. Let's try that again. Good evening, everybody. Jacob Daniel here. This is the Daniel 3 podcast. Thanks for tuning in. It's been a heck of a weekend. My brain is fried. I was on a 7-hour board call last night for the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania because I don't know. I'm a crazy masochistic fucker, I guess. I mean, every hour past the 3-hour mark, I was just like, how many shots in do we have to be before this is no longer consensual and we are all just assaulting each other via Zoom call? So tonight I have a pretty interesting, oh yeah, thanks Dave. I got the this is my shirt from being an executive producer on Joshua Smith's show Break the Cycle. So you can't buy that normally. If you want to get that, you gotta subscribe, you gotta be a supporter of Josh's. But it's a sweet t-shirt. Although the funny story with that is that when I first got it, my wife was like, "Oh, cool. Is that Joshua Smith?" And I was just like, oh no. Oh no, honey. So tonight though, let's get this going. I have a fantastic guest lined up. He is the host of Liberty Lockdown and one of the revolving 10,000 different short bus hosts on the Tower Power Hour, a show that I am banned on, just like I am banned on travel lists and every other, you know, every other government list that probably exists. He is Clint Russell. Clint, how you doing tonight? No, I know. I'm just... Dude, it's such a funny bit, but the problem is, like, I keep on trying to up the ante of it. And it's just like every week, it's just like, what do I got to do now? Like, I can't keep doing the same thing because it'll just get old. So you got to like find a way to like double down each week and make it more insane. So that's why this past week I was like, you know what? I'm going to take shots. It was like, you know,
So I was like, I'm going to cancel Tower Power Hour because they refused to cancel Dave for not going on the system. The system is down podcast, which, you know, that was like a huge, like, meta, like anyone not in our universe would just look at that and be like, what the hell is this crap? Like,
well, this is the problem, is that eventually the joke gets to be funnier than the appeal of even having you on. So now we have to keep the joke going forever. same with Dave. Dave can't go on The System Is Down. I mean, allegedly he's going on this Wednesday, but I don't believe it. It's too funny. I need him to continue to make angry videos trying to cancel Dave.
That was the best. The best part of that, though, I don't know if you watched the stream Dan did after he released that, but like there was like I won't say it was the majority, but a handful of people that were like thought he was serious and thought he was actually trying to cancel Dave and going after him. And he was just like, oh, you poor autistic souls. Like,
yeah, well, this is one thing I've learned. It's not a joke when we say there's a lot of autists in the libertarian community. It is genuine. Because I was tagged in his initial launch of that video, which is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And it had probably a dozen different people coming after him saying, you know, this, you really sounded like you're trying to cancel that, pretty woke, bro. Like, this isn't going to impress. This isn't how you go about it. Like, this is exactly how you go about
Someone did the same thing to me when I did the whole cancel Tower Power Hour. They were just like, oh man, you know, I thought you were cooler than this. And I was just like, bro, it's a joke. Calm down.
I know. Like, it's Twitter. It's sad, but
you know, there's something about Twitter that, like, if you don't know it, you don't know it. And I've been there. Like, I got on Twitter late. Probably only been a year since I got on Twitter, actually. And I remember, like, my first 2 months, I was just like, what the hell is this thing? And every time I tried interacting with someone, I'd get ratioed so bad. And I said no, because I was just like, you know, I never used anything but Facebook. And I was like trying to, you know, with Facebook, it's like you sit down and you're like, oh, okay, you disagree with me. Well, let's try to have a cordial conversation and spend the next 2 hours going back and forth and exchanging sources and good faith arguments and stuff. And you bring that to Twitter and they're like, what the hell are you doing? Like, you know, get the heck out of here.
Yeah, it's not really conducive to good conversation. You know, I've been seriously on Twitter for a little over 2 years now. And yeah, this is why I have a podcast. This is why I like going on podcasts, is because it's really vital that we have a different format for conversations.
There's almost no
viable communication that happens on Twitter like this much.
No, absolutely not. And what's funny is that, like, I've had people ask to come on my podcast after like heated Facebook or Twitter exchanges, because I do like a like a call-in show, and they'll come in and then like 2 hours in they're just like, oh, so I guess we really don't disagree on much. I was like, yeah, we don't. You're just you're on the internet and your autism brain takes over and you're just like, oh, you said it in this way, which is not how I would say it, so obviously you're a you know, rape apologist or Nazi sympathizer or something stupid like that. Like this whole the thing that I got caught up in today that we were talking about before I got on was the whole, for those who don't know, in the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania, the convention's coming up in March. Dave Smith and Tom Woods are speaking at that convention. So first of all, if you're not signed up to come to that convention, like, you know, pause this or keep it on the background and go sign up. Because like Tom Woods doesn't do a lot of libertarian state conventions or like conventions period, and he's going to be there with Dave Smith. It's going to be like, you know, fantastic. Like, you need out to this.
I just got added to the recommended speakers list for all LP state conventions, so if anybody wants me, hit a brother up. I'm still waiting to actually book. Massachusetts reached out and I'm hoping a few others will, because I really want to get some experience talking live.
Ashley Shade's a big fan of your show.
Probably not. No, I don't think she's responsible for it, but someone else reached out, so we'll see if it happens.
guys, give some love to Click to Clint. I'd try to get you here in PA, but like we're already like so like we have like twice the number of speakers we did last year. I mean, it's
minute. I'm not begging. I was added first week of January. So
yeah,
like,
you can be the bathroom connoisseur. You can like sit there and like, you know, like talk to people while they can hand out mints to them and stuff. And
as long as Reed Coverdale's there, I'm interested in whatever happens in the bathroom.
Dave wants you to come to Minnesota. All right.
tell him to book me, man. I'm available. I'm not even looking to get paid. I just want people to cover my transport costs, so I don't have to go out of pocket to go do this dumb shit, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There was a board meeting last night for the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania, because some people got a wind of that whole stupid controversy where clips from Dave from 2017, like 5 years ago. It's never recent. You know what I mean? It's
we're
never like
12 shots.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were upset about the 12 shots clip, which, by the way, like from a borderline fundamentalist Christian conservative perspective, which is what I have, Dave's absolutely right in his take. Like, you don't lose the ability. Yeah, he usually is. Like, you don't lose your ability to consent just because you have consumed alcohol. Unless the only caveat is, like, if you're incapacitated because, like, you're blackout drunk, well, then it's like the problem isn't that you're got alcohol in your system. The problem is you're unconscious. So if you're unconscious, then yeah, like, you know, we most likely, it's a good rule of thumb to not have sex with people who are unconscious, unless you're married. But
I think it's probably still advisable.
Advisable then. Yeah.
But your point is well taken. And of course you're right. And this is what I'm talking about with the Twitter, you know, conversation capacity being almost nil. It's like, anybody that actually saw the entire clip in context understands Dave is not apologizing for rape. He's explaining that, you know, we should have personal responsibility for ourselves, and that includes women, because we think of them as our equals. You know, that's like the whole alleged thing here, is that we're trying to have equal rights and they want to have special rights. And I mean, it's just so transparently not equal. If you're going to pretend that a woman doesn't have the ability to consent in that setting, whereas the man does. I mean, it's just detached from reality. And the idea that, you know, the vast majority of us don't exist on this planet because our parents had a couple extra drinks that night is just also, again, delusional and detached from reality.
My first child was conceived when I was under the influence and my wife wasn't. Well, so it's like, if anything,
she should be in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah. She should be in prison.
It's lunacy. So yeah, I mean, alcohol is not some special magic substance that, like, I mean, it lowers people's inhibitions. So right. Like, while they might,
which is
usually,
why people use it, by the
right.
way.
Right. So it's not like, so people are like, oh, he said that you keep a woman that would say no before and then say yes after. So it's like, oh, well, you're forcing her. Like, no, because you're not forcing. Now, it'd be one thing if you were forcing her to get drunk. Like, if you were like, I don't know, like, but I don't even know how that would happen. Or obviously, you know, date rape drugs or something like that. Like, no one's advocating for that. They're saying if a girl goes to the bar and she's just taking shot after shot, and beginning of the night when you went up and she didn't give you the time of day, and then 12 shots in, you go up and she's going home with you, there's nothing there that's unconsensual or that's a violation of the non-aggression principle.
Even went so far as to say he's not saying it's morally okay. He's just saying it's not criminal. And I think that's a fair differentiator.
I go further than Dave on all this, because, I mean, as a conservative Christian, I'm like, why are you even at the bar trying to hook up with people? I'm like, I mean, I take the super hardline stance, which is, unfortunately, in my opinion, a lot of Christians are getting lukewarm on this, but I still think there's value to saving sex for marriage. Or at the very least, if I was going to be really, like, you know, less stringent on my principles here, I would say at the very least, you should be in a committed relationship in which you are open to the idea of marriage. I'm strongly against, like, hookup culture and just casual sleeping around.
I can't say that I've practiced what you're preaching right now, but I don't oppose it. I just think to each their own kind of thing.
Well, yeah. Like, well, and I've definitely fallen short of that myself. Like, I failed to save sex before. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's what the Bible says I am. So
I'm just messing with you.
I know. Yeah. But it's just funny, because it's like, yeah, absolutely. I have some, like, moral qualms with that kind of behavior. And I often those kind of scenarios always remind me of that expression, like, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. It's like, you know, sure. It's like, it's not a good environment to, or a set of circumstances to be putting yourself in. But, you know, libertarianism is just about like what is legal and what should we, and if something is illegal, if you're going to say something is rape, that means that it justifies, you know, the use of force to restrain them, imprison them, right, perhaps even use lethal force in stopping them from doing something. And it's just, it's not even on the same, it's not even in the realm of sanity to construe hookup culture as aggression. But yeah, people in the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania, and I want to stress, this is like 12 people, 15, you know what I mean? Like, we're not talking like hundreds of people got up and were outraged and protesting. It's like, you know, 5 to 10 really loud, noisy, you know, like, you know, the same people that are usually mad about everything, making a lot of noise about this. So a motion was made to rescind his invitation. We all strongly rejected that motion, and so Dave's invitation was not rescinded, which I'm happy about. But the blowout after that was a lot of people you know, being crybabies about it, being sore losers, and taking to the internet and making a big fuss, including this guy who shared some pretty public information about me. It's hard to constitute it as doxing. But you know, I guess that's a good transition a little bit into one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. But you know, so what you guys did to him today was, you know, you guys did the whole like tower thing on him and, you know, kind of humiliated him a little bit. And then he came to me, you know, like before he blocked me, and he was like, "Oh, some Christian you are. Look at these people. They're coming after me. And this is sick and disgusting." He's like, you know, and I was just like, first of all, like, I'm not the one really doing it to you. You know, second of all, you know, the Bible says you reap what you sow, dude. I was just like,
And who gives a fuck? It's a tower on the internet. Get a life. I mean, Jesus Christ. No. Like, what are you doing here?
Well, yeah, it's just like, you know, yes, I should be really offended by the characters that appear on a, you know, a Twitter thread.
And it's letters too. It's
letters. And it's just
people are so soft these days. Like, I can't even believe that he's softer than his body. Like, this kid needs to toughen up, dude. Good Lord. We're just sending out single letters in a chain. Just block us all or mute the thread. It doesn't matter.
Well, even the outrage over Dave, I'm just like, we have some, you know, we have real evil shit in the world. You know what I mean?
Really?
Like extremely. Like, I mean, like one of the things that Dave talks about ad nauseum is the genocide in Yemen and the conflicts in the Middle East. And
I'm sorry, yeah. And I have all the sympathy in the world for Yemen and the Middle East. We got our own fucking problems to deal with. We have a global totalitarian takeover that's happening, and like, yes, obviously we should end those wars. However, my focus for the past 2 years has been ending the lockdowns, ending the woke Marxist takeover of society. And it's like, these people act as if a five-year-old clip of Dave Smith discussing whether or not there's culpability with the amount of alcohol consumption prior to intercourse is something that we need to cancel him for, when he has been one of the best, most outspoken people on earth over the past decade. It's just stupid. These people lack all sense of, you know, just identifying your enemies, identifying the actual problem. They're dealing with their own internal demons, and they're externalizing, and they're trying to find other things to fill that void. I think a lot of people don't want to face what we're up against. I think a lot of people would rather deal with like LP internal squabbles and little power games, when ultimately we're up against like hell. Like, we are up against hell right now, and people just don't want to face it. And I'm like, I'm facing it head on, because I don't intend to go there.
Yeah, well, and the two things aren't unconnected. I mean, the industrial, you know, the military industrial complex is sort of being there's like cover being played for that by this woke corporatist agenda. So it's not even, you know, it's not even, and honestly,
it's connected for sure.
Oh yeah, and honestly, you know, I felt like the lockdowns and the whole COVID thing from the very beginning was a distraction. You know what I mean? It was like, it got people to stop focusing on a lot of things that were going on throughout 2019 that were like, you know, pretty big deals. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, one of the biggest was the Hong Kong protests. Yep. I mean, that was picking up a lot of news coverage. You know what I mean? And a lot, there was, you know, libertarians that were covering that and doing really good work on that. I mean, these people were, it was basically a secession movement. I mean, well, it was going that way. Yeah.
There was
I
that. There was also color revolutions all across the Middle East. I mean, the people have been rising up pretty, you know, increasingly so over the past 5 or 6 years in particular. And I think that the lockdowns were, you know, if you want to get real Alex Jonesy with it, could have been about having legal precedent to stop, you know, peaceful assembly and protests. I don't know.
Unless you're going to burn down private property, then you're allowed out.
Well, I mean, those aren't riots. Those are
peaceful protests.
State orchestrated takedowns of political enemies, as far as I'm concerned. It's a very, I mean, we do not have equal justice in this country. And there has been, and the libertarians have been great about standing on the behalf of minorities when it comes to them not having equal justice for the longest of time. But now we have a completely different paradigm where anyone that values liberty or the Second Amendment can be labeled as a political dissident and a potential domestic terrorist, and labeled and listed and you know, interrogated, arrested, imprisoned indefinitely without trial, spied upon. I mean, all of this stuff is so grievous and dangerous, and it's just like people would rather deal with, you know, the amount of representation in the Libertarian Party. No disrespect to Martha Bueno. I like her, but I really don't understand people's perspectives on these things. Like when they start talking about, you know, racial makeup of caucuses and things like that, it's like, are you also being duped? Like, have you fallen for this identitarian mindset? I don't understand it. I've invited her on my show, so hopefully we'll get to talk it out. But at this point, I'm just perplexed by it all.
Yeah, and I've become increasingly perplexed by it too. And it's frustrating for me because a lot of people who maybe share my religious views are getting caught up in it one way or the other. It's just hard for me to look at the Bible and listen. It's the Bible says a lot of things on a lot of different topics, and I'm not saying that we should live our life in a very what's the word I'm looking for, like compartmentalized way, where we only like care about the things, like we only take the things out of the Bible that we like and ignore the rest, and that's definitely not the way that I try to walk my faith and walk my religion. And that stuff bugs me, but I don't think that everything in the Bible has like the same weight to it. And you know, and not only that, but going beyond the Bible, I don't think that every violation of liberty has the same weight behind it. I don't think that every topic in the world has the same weight behind it. And it's just, it's like, so it's like when sometimes these people get like so hyper focused in this way where they're just like, well, I'm just really offended by the things that these people said. And I go, all right. So I didn't like, I can even sometimes go, you know what? I didn't like that thing either, but okay. It's just like, I don't like it. And I move on. Like I don't lose sleep over. I don't even lose a minute over it. It's just kind of like, I'm annoyed for a few seconds, maybe a minute or two at most. And I move on with my day and I forget about it. Like I can't even remember the last time I looked at something and read it and had a small annoyance. It's like, I just, outrage is a finite resource. And I think that, especially people who call themselves followers of Christ, if you're not the most outraged at war and the most outraged at where the state is advocating for violence against peaceful people, and instead you're caught up in these really petty squabbles over the Libertarian Party or over just like gatekeeping the movement broadly, where you're just like, oh well, these people can't be associated with us because they've said offensive things. It's like you're approaching this all wrong. You're trying to approach people because like to believe that that's how we should be focused is to be immediately playing the game the way that our enemy wants to play it, I think. Because the minute we start equivocating mean words with all of the evil shit that the state does, we are losing. We are losing so badly. Because they're just not even in the same like universe. You know what I mean? Well, like mean words
I made this
on Twitter just do not compare to, you know, everything that we just listed and talked about.
Yeah, I made this point on a stream with some Australians yesterday. I mean, it's just detached from reality. I mean, you have Trump, who went out of his way, and I think he did a good thing by having like First Step and all these other things to try and help Black people and minorities who were put behind bars for really egregious amounts of time on egregious sentences, and to try and kind of right those wrongs. And yet, because he's taken out of context in talking about Charlottesville, he is labeled as the racist president. Whereas you have Biden, who's responsible for imprisoning many of those people that Trump was freeing. He also talks about, Black people as if they are lesser. I mean, Biden is by my worldview, clearly and definitionally a literal racist, and in all the worst ways imaginable. The only difference is that he's able to, because of the media narrative, he's able to run on this platform of looking out for minorities, when in fact he's been a complete disaster for them for 50 years. I mean, he's been horrifically bad. And this is what I'm talking about when it comes to, narrative versus reality. Like, maybe Trump's a racist too. I don't know. I honestly don't care. I don't care if any of these people are racist, because all I care about is if their policies actually affect people in a negative way. And in my opinion, Trump was better for minorities than Biden was. But because people are so caught up in narrative, it's like, well, the Tower Gang guys say the N-word sometimes, so they must be racist. It's like, but we're not. We're actually not. We love people of all looks and walks of life. And it's like, who cares? I mean, the whole reason that we're aggressively, brash is because we think this is all nonsense. We believe in meritocracy and, the content of your character type stuff, like the old Martin Luther King shit minus the socialism. Like, that's what I'm about. But, narrative goes the other way, and that's what
people
think.
That's a real quote. I can imagine it, to be honest.
Yeah, no, he said it.
Wow.
I swear to God.
Yeah, that's something.
He's a real racist.
It doesn't surprise me.
And that's not the worst part about Joe Biden. Yeah. Don't get it twisted. No. The fact that he's a racist, like an old school 1940s racist, is not the worst part about Joe Biden. The worst part about him is that he's a power hungry psychopath that will absolutely leave a trail of dead bodies in his wake as he climbs the ladder of political power. He is evil incarnate. And he is also now a puppet to the most evil people on the planet, who want to strip you of all your liberty just so that they can fucking... get a little bit richer, get a little bit more powerful. These people are evil, like to their core evil. And if you think that racism is the problem with it, you're just not paying attention.
Well, I mean, I think part of it, there's a few things. One of it is that I just think in general, people need a thicker skin. And this is like universal, like my fellow Christians need thicker skin. Libertarians need thicker skin. I mean, just, I don't know.
Everyone.
I mean, on the thing about words, I mean, people get so caught up on the N-word or, calling people faggots or call. And for me, it's just like I don't view any word as off limit, although depending on who I'm talking to, I will try to, like, if they have a hiccup with a certain word, I won't make a big deal about it. If they're just approaching it from like a, hey, I'd appreciate if you didn't use that word, rather than like trying to, come at me and, call me a racist or call me homophobic. Because what's funny is, like, I grew comfortable using words like that by hanging out with the people those words would be used to describe in a derogatory fashion.
Of course.
Like, I went to a church in Baltimore. Okay. I was like maybe one of two or three white people in that church for about 5 years of like my most formative years, from like 10 to like 15. I was in like an almost predominantly all black church.
I'd imagine you got called cracker a lot.
Yes. And I heard the, and if you're going to think that because it's church, I didn't hear the N-word. Yeah, you're mistaken. That word got thrown around a lot. And I remember hanging out at a friend's house one. What? Go ahead.
Let me just say real quick. For the record, I don't really use those words. I don't use some of the more egregious language that some of my Tower Gang cohorts use. But I think I do it simply because I think it gets kind of, my point gets lost when I do it. It's not that I don't use them, because
I don't use those words often, but if I ever feel compelled to use it, I try not to let
the fear of people getting offended stopping from using it.
And
that's
agree.
Basically it. They probably, those words probably don't come out of my mouth more than maybe once or twice a month at most. Maybe there's probably even periods of times where I don't. But if I ever feel like using it, I don't let the fear of people being offended stop me from using it. I say
him right when I wake up, and then I say him before I go to bed, kind of like the Lord's Prayer.
Is there like a special saying? You're just like N-word, F-word.
I don't even know the Lord's Prayer, but I can tell you all of the lyrics to basically any Tupac song. So, I mean, it's just. I just don't use them because my point gets lost when I use them, because people have been, molded into being very, very sensitive about these things.
Sure.
But I don't have any problem with people using them as long as it's done in the spirit that I would deliver it to. And that's how my Tower Gang guys do it. So I don't give a fuck, and I'm not going to apologize for any of it. And I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if we lose people because of it. It's fine. I don't care. Well, you're missing the entire point. Like, I don't know.
Well, and it's just like, if we can't convince people that bombing children in other countries and locking people in their homes indefinitely and destroying their careers and destroying people's life savings through the hyperinflation. Like, if we can't convince people that this stuff is like more important, then we have a problem. And the problem is either that the post-libertarian people are right and that libertarianism is doomed because people are just like never going to be there's just like a hyper majority of people that are never going to be convinced, or I tend to lean towards the idea that we just need to do a better job at presenting our case. I certainly don't think everybody is persuadable, but I don't think it's close to, like, I don't think it's just 1% of people are persuadable either.
It's way higher.
Yeah, it's I think it's higher than 10%. I mean, I couldn't put a number to it, but it's just like, I think that
it's not enough to win a vote on a national federal level, but it is definitely way higher than where we pull at right now. So like giving up on it entirely is stupid, but I do agree with the post-libertarians in one regard. And I don't know if they've even made this point, but I think that libertarianism is really formulated for a very rare and special breed of human being. Like it requires someone who is both capable, independent, hardworking, moral, principled, driven. Like it's basically best formulated for people that are really capable of winning in any societal makeup. And there's not a lot of people like that. And I don't say this to like make libertarians sound as if they're elitist. It's that I believe that like if you're willing not only to stand on your own two feet, but to turn to others and say, hey, you can do it too, and I can show you how. Like that requires a level of moral strength and courage and confidence that very few people have.
Well, there's a difference between like active libertarians and like passive libertarians, I guess. Like there's people that just maybe like at their core, whether it's even explicitly or not, they're libertarian in their psychology, in their general worldview and beliefs and whatnot. But they just like, I just want to live my life. And I believe these things are true. If I was going to vote, I would vote with these incentives and these beliefs, but they don't do much. I think there's a lot of people out there that are like that. I do think the people that are more like you and me and Dave and the Mises Caucus and all that, we're, I think, the minority of people that are like, not only do we believe this stuff, but we have this weird drive to like go out there and honestly, my label for it as a Christian one, it's basically like we have an evangelist mindset. Is what I think that unites all of us.
Yeah.
It's just that
I do definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, and we want to go out there and we want to inspire people to see the same thing that we see and to be transformed in the same way that we've been transformed. Yeah. And then if we can even just,
But I actually mean it more broadly though. It's not just the evangelists that have to have all of those traits that I just said, but people that are really going to believe and vote libertarian have to believe that they are capable of doing better than this current paradigm without the government in their lives. Like that, when you've been indoctrinated for, a dozen years in public school and all of the media narrative is that, government lifts people up, business suppresses you, like, it requires a kind of a leap of faith, a strength of character, a belief in yourself that is rare. Not a lot of people have it these days. And I mean, this is a product of statism and an overpowerful state. And you know, I think that it still requires kind of a unique and special person. And I don't think that we should downplay it. I think that you should sell libertarianism as an idea of like, hey, this shows something about you. Because Democrats do it all the time. They always frame it as like, I'm the good person. I care about the poor and the downtrodden. Do they in reality? No. They just care about looking like they do. But the libertarians genuinely care. And that makes them special. And we should strip the moral high ground from the leftists who actually would suppress and depress your children with their shitty tyrannical policies and say, no, 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 no. We have the moral high ground.
Yeah. No, I think I mostly agree with you there. You know, I think there's a lot of people that I guess what I was referring to is people that remind, like my dad has always sort of been sort of like in his mindset and worldview has been libertarian, even if he doesn't like, he's not read Rothbard or Hoppe or Mises or anything like that, but he's never really fit in with like your maybe like hyper Republican voter. He's always like, anytime a politician leans libertarian, that's the way he goes, even if he's not like hyper passionate about it in the same way that I am. So I think there's a lot of people out there that, and I think there's a lot of people out there like that, that if we just can do the groundwork of presenting them better options and maybe just nudging them ever so slightly to start making them look, you know, even just like a little bit more local, like focus more on their governor, focus more on their municipality. And I think that's getting easier actually with the lockdown stuff. Cause a lot of this lockdown stuff, as much as we can blast Trump and blast Biden and all that, a lot of it started with governors and local governments. And so I think a lot of people have become in the last 2 years, a bit more like hyper aware of the impact of local government. Even I was like, as an autistic libertarian, I was like, you know, so hyper-focused on the federal government. I don't think I was quite, it was a bit of a shell shock, even for me, just how tyrannical state governments were. And like, you know, you kind of expect it out of, you kind of expect it out of like maybe New York and California, but even other states excuse me, I live in Pennsylvania and we have a Democrat governor who's certainly not great, but, I never expected the degree to which he would try to leverage force against all of us. And really the only thing that kept me relatively free the past 2 years is just that I live in a very red county. Yeah. So no one cared. Like just no one complied and law enforcement didn't really give a shit. But other parts of Pennsylvania were not as lucky, unfortunately. So
the past 2 years unmasked the brazen, you know, power structure that is government, and I'm grateful for it. I think that it woke up a lot of blue-pilled conservatives and red-pilled the hell out of them, and thank God, not a moment too soon. I mean, we need these people in the fight, and I think it red-pilled a lot of you know, good leftists when it comes to bodily autonomy and things like that. So I'm not without hope. Like I think there's lots of reason to be hopeful. It's just I want people to like really grasp how short a fuse we have on this thing. Cause like we are staring down the barrel of my two-pronged metaphor, poorly laid out metaphor here. And people are very lackadaisical about it. I mean, even libertarians, when they start talking about 2024 elections, I get bothered. Like, I don't understand what, like how you guys are still focused on like federal level solutions to this shit. Not to mention 2+ years out from now, like two and a, almost 3 years out from now, it's like we could have a full economic collapse, societal breakdown, civil war, like everything is on the table over the next 3 years. So I just hope that people understand, like, it's not enough to just hope for a man on a white horse to ride in and save us. Like this, you need to be involved and you need to be taking action to help you and your family and protect yourself immediately. There is no more delaying.
Well, and we talked a little bit about this when you and I were both on Josh Smith's show back in, I guess, like late December. And we were talking about like our disappointment in the church. Now, obviously, you're not a Christian and stuff, but we were just like, that was a group of people that I expected a lot more out of. Like, as much as I was disappointed, like a lot of libertarians were disappointed in the Libertarian National Party and even disappointed in Judge Jorgensen and Spike to an extent for not talking more about the lockdowns and mandates and stuff like that. But I was just because I'm just you know, my religious views, I was really disheartened by the church's response because I was expecting a lot more people to refuse. I mean, like, one of the most basic parts of Christianity is like coming together to gather to worship. Like, it's the whole reason for having a church. I mean, otherwise it's just like, well, just maybe it's otherwise like, why wouldn't it just be like Hinduism? Just like, oh, read the stuff and have a spiritual journey at home. But like, the whole point, like, do not forsake the gathering of believers and the book of Acts going through the building of the early church. And I'm just like, we're supposed to be doing this. Especially bothered by, like, I'm not Catholic, but Catholics and Lutherans to maybe a smaller extent believe in, have a special emphasis on the importance of the Eucharist. And I'm just like, you can't do the Eucharist from home. Like, I'm just like, so like you guys, so I just like, I always knew there's a lot of people that call themselves Christian, but don't really like believe it in a way that would impact action. I had no idea it was as bad as what it really showed out to be. Cause it's just like, if you really believe that, like, especially like if you believe that the Eucharist is what, you know, the Catholic Church proclaims it to be. And just for all Christians, if you believe in the words of what the Bible says, if you believe in what the story of the resurrection of Jesus is, and you believe that in a way that like you're supposed to be born again, you're supposed to be transformed and into a new creation. It's like, and then you're like, oh, well, scary virus, so we're not going to do that for the next 2 years. It's like,
well, I'm going to be a little less kind than you and say that it showed a lot of these people to be frauds. Yeah. I mean, if you believe that God is your highest power and you're going to allow your mortal coils to be held down by this, what is in reality your highest power on this plane, which is the state, I don't think that you're living out your belief system in a real principled fashion. And I don't say that to like shame them. It's not even my religion. I'm just pointing out an obvious truth. Like, if you're going to allow the police to stop you from congregating, especially when, you know, you're a constitutional Bible thumping type person who believes that there's a separation of church and state and that this is sacrosanct and like you have to respect these things. These are constitutionally protected rights. And you just say, yes, well, sir, officer, and you walk away. Well, you're not really living out your principles there.
Forget the Constitution even. Like, just look at the reason why people came to America. Like, it was almost primarily for religious freedom.
Of course.
It was. So it's like, how have we gotten so, I mean, it's only been 200 some, like, you know, 270, 280 years or whatever. It's like, how have we gotten so far off the reservation? I just don't get it.
I was apparently blue pilled on the religious people in this country because, and conservatives for that matter, because I did not think them to be of such little backbone. And I say that with all the kindness and love in my heart. Like I don't say it to like bag on people. I'm just saying I thought more highly of you guys. Like not you, but the Christian community, the two-way community, the constitutional conservative community. I thought you guys had more guts. I thought that people were, I didn't think that I was like a particularly courageous person. I thought that this was kind of a shared American ethos that,
I mean, you look at the
church, if the government turns on us, we stand together and we fight back. And it's not like, it's not a bold principled stand as much as it is just like a knee-jerk American instinct. Like, oh, you want to tell us that we can't do this? Well, this is bigger than your relationship with us. This is our relationship with God. So back the fuck off.
Right. It doesn't even have to be that, like some people, especially like your diehard, maybe like Trump conservatives, you know, like, America types might be that way. But even more so, like my attitude wasn't even like that hostile. It was just like, it was just a simple no. I'm not going to do that.
Sure.
Just in the same way that, I mean, I don't know if you remember if you know the reference of my podcast name, Daniel 3, it's Meshach, Radshach, and Abednego refusing to bow down to Nebuchadnezzar. And, you know, at the threat of like, they were going to be, you know, thrown into a furnace. And it's just like, and they didn't make a big deal about it. They were just like, It was like, are you not going to bow? Because if you do not bow, we're going to throw you into this furnace. And it was like, how much faith do you have in this God of yours? And they were like, well, we have faith that he can preserve us if you throw us in there. But even if he doesn't, he's God and you're not. And we're just not going to bow to you, dude.
Yep.
Like, that was it. Like, it wasn't like a huge rah-rah speech. It wasn't like, you know, like shouting and theatrical. It was just like a simple no, not going to do it. And if I die, I die. It's just like, I'm not going to bow down to a false God. I'm not going to disobey God just because you threatened my life. I mean, the apostles, you know, almost every single one of them died at the hands of the state, including Jesus died at the hands of the state for the refusal to stop doing what God told them to do. I mean, and it's like,
this is something I learned about myself over the past 2 years since I started my show is like, I've always considered myself agnostic. You know, I never was a practicing a person of any religious faith, and having witnessed kind of what makes me different from a lot of people in this community, as well as just my, you know, my fellow countrymen. I've discovered that I have a religious faith in liberty. Like I have it. And I don't know how it happened. And I've gotten in a lot of trouble for this because I've talked about it and people get really disturbed by it. You know, people go like, oh, well, that's, some people think it's sacrilegious. Some people think that it's Fed posting. Some people think that I'm bullshitting. I don't know. I don't know why people have a negative reaction to it, but I'm being honest. So I'm going to keep talking about it. My gut reaction when the government threatens me with imprisonment or death, if I don't go along with relinquishing every last one of my liberties, is to tell them to take me, you know, like the same way you described it in that religious passage or the biblical passage, I don't even look at it as some like courageous act. I just say like, this is something bigger than me. And I don't have a name for it. I don't like, sure. I could say it's liberty. I could say it's freedom. I could say it's Ron Paul. Like, I don't know what it is, man. I honestly, I don't know what it is, but there is a belief in this that's bigger than me and I'm willing to perish for it. And that's so powerful. And I don't know why. I don't know. I don't even know how I got it. But it's just an interesting kind of revelatory experience that I've had over the past 2 years where I was like, wow, like there is something I believe in that's bigger than myself.
Yeah. No, I really like that. And what it makes me think of is like the part of the Bible where it says the truth will set you free. And to me, I think what the thing that might be driving you, and it certainly drives me, both in a religious sense, but even just like in a, you know, just my personality, I cannot stand to be wrong. I almost autistically seek after the truth. And I do so because I feel like I've just my life experience, I've learned the hard way that rejecting the truth makes you it literally enslaves you to lies and, yes, or to whatever the, you know, the,
sure
to the, sometimes it's just like, people are afraid of the truth because it has bad consequences. And it's like, okay, fair enough. Sometimes the truth is rough, right? Mm-hmm. Like, no one says the truth is going to always be pretty, but you can be free with the truth or you can be enslaved rejecting the truth. And I don't know. There's just something in my soul, I guess, that like I refuse to be enslaved to dishonesty.
That's my favorite,
error.
Sentence. That's my, yeah. Oh, see, I just refuse to be enslaved.
Well, yeah.
Period.
I mean,
you're being more specific, yeah.
I would refuse to be enslaved, period. But I guess like even more specifically, it's like the thing that I'm the most afraid to be enslaved to is not even a man or say that God is God is your master, you're a slave to him. It's just like, I'm not really afraid of any of that. I mean, and the Bible says, don't fear the one that can destroy your body, fear the one that can destroy your soul. And it's just like, what destroys your soul? What destroys morality more than dishonesty? And like, where do all our problems come from? They come from a failure to acknowledge truth and a failure of people to boldly proclaim truth.
God,
and so,
you're so right.
Yeah. So, like, you need the truth to set you free. And so, if we want liberty, what does Dave say? Dave says this all the time. It's not complicated. We just have to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. That's what he always says. That's what made Ron Paul great. Ron Paul got up there. He didn't make a big fuss about like, oh, well, I'm in this state, so I need to think about the issues that they care about. I need to think about, look at the poll numbers from the last election and look at the demographics. And Rob was like, no, I'm just going to get up there. And I know about these 5-6 topics, and I'm just going to get up there and speak the truth and say why I think this stuff matters. And that resonated with a lot of people, because it's like, turns out that the truth and being genuine, there's a lot of people that are looking for that, or even if they're not looking for it, it's sort of like a glitch in the matrix.
Yes.
And then people just kind of
like seeing a black cat.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. I mean, this is why we have Dave Smith, is because Ron Paul had that courage.
Right.
This is why you probably have most of us, is because Ron Paul had that courage. And this is how I live my life too. I am brutally, savagely honest, not just with people in my life, but with myself too. And I think that's always the key. A lot of people are capable of being honest with others, but then they miss the mark when it comes to themselves. I mean, actually, I shouldn't say a lot of people. Few people are capable of being honest with everyone in their lives, but then even fewer are capable of being honest with themselves all the time.
Right.
I am my harshest critic, always have been, always will be. And I think that's basically why I am who I am. And it's okay. You know, it's very hard. It's very hard living like this. It's very hard being as critical of yourself as, you know, sometimes is necessary, but I believe that it holds you to the highest standard. I believe that it derives the most good from your existence. And I wish that it was more in vogue. I wish that people had more courage to live this way. And I wish people had the strength to do it more than like the imperative. Like I wish that people just had the foundational confidence to be like, I'm going to look really critically at myself and say, what am I doing that's helping and hurting? And then I'm going to fix these things. You know, it's just, and I know so few people in my life live this way. I mean, it's a very rare trait. And I think this is what makes the best spokespeople for libertarianism. They have to live that way, because if you aren't authentic, you can't speak in an authentic way. You have to be telling the truth. You have to be speaking from your heart, because otherwise people will sense it. They will know that like you are off the path. Like if you're being honest all the time, you're very consistent. And this is why he's the most consistent motherfucker we know. It's like, if you're being honest all the time, it's very hard to get caught up in a lie, because you're being honest all the time. So.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I lost my train of thought. There was a comment here I wanted to bring up. Road to Providence, David Brady, good young guy with a great new podcast. You guys definitely check it out. But this is a fact of that story that not a lot of people often realize, but it's true that Abraham had faith that God was going to protect his child rather than hurt him. And I guess it's sort of like reminiscent of what we're talking about here in this pursuit of truth. Because I think sometimes, like some libertarians, they overcomplicate it. Sometimes these post-libertarian praxian types, I feel like some of the stuff they say I agree with, but sometimes I feel like they're overcomplicating it, because it's just like, you know, another good story to kind of piggyback off of David here is the story of Joseph. And, you know, that guy went through some fucking shit. I mean, he got sold into slavery and by his brothers, and then worked his way up as a slave. To be like, you know, like a slave of like a, you know, like a rich dude, like a noble, and with like the most trusted slave. But then the guy's wife tries to lure Joseph into having sexual relations with her. He refuses. So then she accuses him of raping her. So then he gets put in prison. It's just like all this shit happens to him. But not once does he lie. Not once does he run away. He waits it out, and then God uses that situation to then save Egypt and save the entirety of Israel. And it's like, okay, so telling the truth isn't always expedient, is sort of like, I guess what I'm trying to get at here is like, sometimes following after what is right, following after the right path is not going to be expedient. It's not going to lead to like the most immediate results. And sometimes the way to immediate results is to sort of like bend the truth a little bit, or at least like ignore the parts of the truth that make you uncomfortable. Right. Because sure. I think there's a lot of people that like, it's not even so much that they're completely denying the truth, but they're just like, oh, I
oblivious to it.
Or they're purposely ignoring the uncomfortable parts of it and focusing on the parts that they do like. So,
oh, yeah. People are very capable of that.
Yeah. And like, definitely, you know, with all this lockdown stuff, I mean, like a lot of people have been focused on what is expedient in different ways. There are some people that are like, well, it seems expedient of me to just submit to it. Just like get the jab. It's going to be easier. You know, I don't want to fight this. I don't want to make a big scene. I don't want to cause family drama. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to have to move. It's just, you know, so
this is why they utilize the ratchet effect, is because each individual step is a relatively easy, small ask. If they were to hit you in the first day of lockdowns with the cumulative of like, we're going to fire you a year and a half from now if you don't take this experimental thing, blah, 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 blah. You know, if they were to list everything and you weren't going to be able to travel, internationally or even on interstate travel via airplane. And like, if they were to list all of this in the first day, we would have been like, oh, this is an invasion. This is a takeover. This is not a response to a virus. This is a complete demolition of our way of life. But because they string it out and they make it, no, just stay home for 2 weeks. And then it's the mask, and then it's two, and then it's none, and then it's this, and then it's that. And then all of a sudden you're looking back 2 years later and you're like, holy shit, what have I allowed to transpire? And
15 days to flatten the curve turned into gene therapy or be homeless really quickly.
Exactly right. And this is why, you know, even though I will sometimes come across, you know, overly conspiratorial, I haven't been wrong. You know, so like, maybe you should consider whether or not I sound like I'm being too much of a conspiracy theorist. I told you a year and a half ago on my show that this shit was serious and that you needed to say no, like as soon as possible, you needed to say no. And we haven't said no enough. I mean, enough of us.
It's so funny. The like the Facebook memories thing where it shows you like old posts. So I remember 2021 just having like all these posts that I made early on when people were announcing lockdowns and people telling me I was overreacting, telling me like, oh, they would never do this. They never do this. And I just like, you know, highlight them and message people and go, remember this?
Remember that?
Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people still say it to you today. We're 2 years deep and they're just like, well, just get the booster. It's like it was supposed to be one. We're up to three. We're talking four. Many
There's
countries
a lot
have
of people
four.
Though that are starting to, I mean, like even like my mom was like quick to get the vaccine. Got the first booster, the second, but now she's just like, are they ever going to stop? Just how about they ever? And I was just like, no. Like if they say jump and you say how high and you keep doing it every time they ask you to, why would they stop?
Right.
I mean, they have no.
Well, it's because most of these people don't think that this is a control, you know, test. They think that it's really about a virus. They really do. And I don't know how other than time and suffering that the majority of people will understand what you and I have understood for a long time, which is this is a control game. And,
right.
And the sooner you say no, the faster that this ends. And that's as simple as I can put it. And that's the fucking truth. And it's been the truth for a very long time. I'm just grateful that more people are seeing it.
Oh, I agree. On the flip side, though, it seems like there are some people who they're going to try to find expedient solutions, but in the opposite way, their expedient solution is, well, we just need to seize power and, you know, like go to war against the left or the bad parts of the right. And just
right.
Doesn't matter if we're super authoritarian while we're doing it. You know, let's just play the game to win. And it's like, OK, well, that might seem like an expedient way to gain some freedom in the short term. And believe me, it's like I'm sympathetic to that to a degree. Like, I get why people in Florida support Ron DeSantis. And the other governors that have been good on lockdowns. I get why people are moving to those states. And you know, there's a certain part, like there's a line, we're up into that line. It's like, okay, I'm not saying we can never do what's expedient, but then there's like a line that you cross where it's just like people start. It's like, now you are just the flip, the, uh, the flipped version of what you oppose, where you're just like, right. Now I'm going to be vindictive and punitive. And it's like, well, this is the problem is the state, like with either of those branches, I feel like the state wins, because the state wins when we are focused more on fighting these culture wars and we're focused more on left versus right than we are on like reality itself. And I guess like to me, it's like it's a different version of the same issue where people are avoiding the truth because they want what's expedient and easier. And it's harder. Well, it's harder to criticize the Praxians and post-libs because it's like they seem to be getting the truth, but it's like they see the truth, but then they're almost like turning away from it because they're like, oh, I see the truth, but I reject it because this isn't like going to solve my problems tomorrow. It's like, well, no, right. Like libertarianism is not going to work tomorrow. But the problem is statism continues to work because people continue to use it and to justify its existence. It reminds me of like I had a debate on my podcast, a call-in show, 2 weeks ago, and it was over like that whole like I guess it was the Texas abortion ban. And so I mean, as an anarchist, I'm against all legislation. I want like privatize everything. Even as a pro-life Christian, I generally am kind of agnostic on the ability of bans, even at like a local level, to be effective in combating abortion. But what I said, what my take was on Twitter was, at the end of the day, I viewed this as a positive move towards liberty because it was it's like I would rather have 50 states with different abortion policies than have one giant policy set by the Supreme Court or the federal government. But then the solution to that is, okay, now break it down from the state to the county and from the county to the municipality and just keep pushing decentralization.
Yeah.
But their opposition to that was, well, but that there's going to be people who are being, you know, that's going to cause some harm. Like there's going to be people who are going to be living in areas that they can't afford to move out of, and abortion is going to be banned. And sometimes the law is not enforced correctly and people will be harmed.
The post-libertarians take the other side of that coin where they say, well, if you're not banning it, then you don't believe it's murder.
Right. Exactly. But what my point to her was like, you could say, well, in the short term, you're protecting women's lives more and maybe protecting on paper more liberty if you prevent states from banning abortion. But I think the problem is where that's a losing strategy in the long run, because you've given another reason for the federal government to exist. And that's the problem. The problem is like the state exists because it creates all of these reasons why people think it's needed to exist. And the more we can normalize the idea that even if we don't need the federal government, we just need state governments, right? We don't need the state government for this. We just need local governments, or hey, the market does this better than the government. Like the more we push things in that direction, the more we win. But the more libertarians refuse to play that game, I don't know, just the more irritated I get. And it's, I don't know what your thought is. It's like, I don't, because like their, I guess, critique is, oh, libertarians are living in fantasy land where they think they're just going to convince everyone to be libertarian. It's like, well, I've never believed that for a second. But I also don't believe that it's a good long-term game to just be like, oh, well, because we can't convince everybody and because it's a...
we're going to wield the power of the state. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, it's hard to get the ring from the Shire to Mount Doom and it looks impossible. So therefore let's just wield it against Sauron. Like, no, that's stupid. It doesn't.
Well, Ashton will appreciate that metaphor as my live-in nerd. I mean, obviously I agree with you, man. And I think that it's, you know, if you're going to use religious pretext with these discussions, which is what many of the post-libertarians do, I think that you're missing the mark personally. When you start to talk in this really vindictive fashion about political dissidents, it's like, of course I agree. And I am victim to this as much as anybody. I want to see Fauci and Gates and all these people in prison for the rest of their lives at a minimum. But if you're going to use religious scripture to discuss this, I think that's an interesting leap when you start talking about not just Fauci and these other people, but their followers, the people that that have gone woke, that are true believers in the Church of Fauci and things like that, and you talk about punishing these people, I think you get into a point of like, this is going to be tit for tat escalating towards war. And if you're a Christian, ultimately, my assumption is that you believe in peace and avoiding war up until, you know, the point of self-defense at the last resort. But I don't understand it. I don't get it.
And even that's contested sometimes within Christianity.
Sometimes you just accept your fate. Yeah.
Yeah. Some people say you turn the cheek the whole way to death. And, you know, I gotta tell you, that's tough.
I don't agree with that. But
I don't like fully agree with it, but it's sometimes hard for me to go, okay, do I disagree with it for biblical reasons or personal reasons? And it's, but at the very least, I would say self-defense is always morally legitimate, but I do think there are situations where it is better to turn the other cheek, because kind of the way you're just talking about, it's like, even if you are justified in retaliating, sometimes that just begets more violence. You know what I mean? Like,
it almost always does.
Yeah. Like, insofar as we can de-escalate things, that generally is going to serve our purposes better. And libertarianism is about peace. And I think Christianity is ultimately about peace. And it just seems to me like, I guess, like the problems we have to avoid are like nihilism and complacency on one side, but on the other side, like getting so
too
letting, aggro. Yeah. Like letting our enemies whip us up into like just getting back into that like collectivist reactionary mindset.
Right. And see, just, yeah, this is the thing with, you know, and I've said this a dozen times and I stand by it. I believe that people like Fauci, the people that orchestrated this stuff, that were the mouthpieces for it, have to pay a price. And that maybe that's not Christian, I don't know, but I think it's human nature. I think that if you have people that believe that they are protected politically, that they can get away with this stuff, that they can ruin the global economy and fiat currency and society and your child's mental health, they can get away with all of that because they have the power of the state behind them. We have to shatter that paradigm. You cannot have people that believe that they can get away with the destruction of 7 billion people's lifestyles and pay no consequences. So I believe in punishment for those people. I do not believe in punishing the average Rachel Maddow viewer who tacitly endorsed, you know, masking of children and creating all of these suicides and drug addictions and drug overdoses. Like, sure, do they pay a moral price? Do they have something that I now think lesser of them? Of course. But do I want to forgive them and move past this? Yes, I do. I have no interest in living in a completely segregated, separated society for the rest of my existence, where I now have these people that have to carry the mark that they tried to place on me. They tried to place a red card in my chest pocket, saying that I was unclean
to them. And it just,
and I don't want
to
do that to them.
It just creates blowback. I mean, it's just, you know what I mean? It's just like, and you just, the cycle continues. And
and I don't know why the Christians don't get this. I'm not even Christian and I get it.
Yeah. Like I said, it's just, and it's like, so I often, it's weird that as a Christian, I often, like, on my show have had more common ground with like atheists or agnostics like yourself who aren't explicitly Christian, but I'm just like, sometimes these people get Christian teachings better than other Christians. And I'm just like,
I'm telling you, it's weird.
It's
Reed Coverdale is one of the most Christian people I've ever met, even though he says completely insane stuff. But yeah, the way he lives his life, he's a very Christian person.
Well,
and
I told Reed the other day, in like a private chat, I was just like, the strongest argument against Christianity is just like how bad Christianity is. Or how bad Christians are, I guess, is a better way to put it. It's like they just fail, and on some level, it's kind of a, what is it, like a two-quote fallacy, I guess. Like, it doesn't prove that the Bible's wrong, that Christians got to live up to it, but it kind of begs the question of like, why are so many getting it so wrong? And I have reasons for why I think they do, but I mean, I think ultimately it's like, I look at it from like a historical perspective, and like the early church was like based as fuck, man. I mean, like, they refused to recognize the legitimacy of Caesar. They refused to recognize the legitimacy of Rome. They were a huge problem in the empire. But then,
not gonna lie, that sounds a lot like the Mises Caucus today.
My church. Yeah. Now you're, see, I got shit from the Fakertarians like 4 or 5 months ago, because I compared the Mises Caucus. What I said was, I said Dave Smith and the Mises Caucus are doing a better job of following the teachings of Christ in this specific way than a lot of Christians are. And then everyone was like, oh, you're calling Dave Smith a Messiah.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, it's fucking crazy.
Well, I'm going to be on with the Figuratarians on Tuesday, so stay tuned.
Oh, are you? Oh, ooh, yeah. I'll have to tune in for that.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I have no idea what they want to talk to me about, but we'll find out.
Oh, boy. Well, are you ready to answer about the Mighty Ducks?
Oh, God. If they even want to go there, I'm not going to defend. Well, what's his name? I can't even remember.
Lou Rockwell.
Yeah,
which Rockwell. Is just like, you brought this up earlier. I was just like, okay, Lou Rockwell might be a little racist because, like, guess what? Everyone in his time period was a little racist.
Yeah.
Like,
most people that are in their 70s are. Sorry.
Yeah. It's like, is it something that I'm going to like applaud? No. Is it something that I'm like extremely offended by? Also, no. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't want to get too off topic, but it's just, but yeah, I've been on their show and I had Hudak on my show, and I don't know. I kind of regretted doing that, but I don't know.
Well, I'll probably regret it too, if that makes you feel any better. I don't know why I took it on. Honestly, it's because I want to debate these people. Like, I want to, and not even like in a contentious, shitty way. I just want to like measure our ideas versus theirs, because they're so confident in their ideas, even though they constantly get demolished every time they talk to any of us. But still, I'm just like, at some point, these people are going to recognize, like, you can't defend these positions because we have thought about everything you're thinking about. We've gone another couple layers deep into it, and we understand everything you're going to say. And here's the reason that you're wrong. And like, I know exactly, like, broadly, they're going to throw at me. And
the problem is that, like, I mean, I'm not saying don't do it, but like the arguments often end up not being effective because there's a cultural schism. And the problem is, like, there's a lot of libertarians that actually don't believe in personal responsibility. Is what I've come to realize. And that's a problem. Yep. I mean, you brought this up earlier, and I remembered what I was going to bring up. It reminds me of the Jordan Peterson rule to treat yourself like you're somebody you're responsible for, which I've always, as a nerd, I've likened that to like a video game RPG where like you have your character. And what's funny is that like we always work, I don't know if you play video games or not, but
sure.
Whenever you have like an RPG, like a Skyrim or World of Warcraft or whatever.
Great game.
Skyrim, yeah, like maybe. Yeah, Skyrim's awesome. You always put like so much effort into your character and building your character's skills and equipment and all this stuff. And then you're like, okay, cool. What if I treated myself like the character in the video game? Where I was like, oh, I'm gonna go work out. Yeah, I'm gonna get off the couch. I'm gonna go work out. I'm gonna go get this. I'm gonna go do these productive things. And it's just like, wow, like it's so easy to do it when it's just like, you know, thumb, 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 thumb. But like right. To go and do it in real life is hard. But like, I'm just like, so when I first heard that rule by Jordan Peterson, I likened it to that because I grew up playing video games. And I was just like, yeah, like I want to treat myself like somebody I'm responsible for. So it's like the things that I want to do, like, you know, I actually want to do them. You know what I mean? So I had to motivate myself.
I got that from Jordan Peterson even years prior to that. Believe it or not, the stoner theologian himself, Joe Rogan, was teaching me about be the star of your own movie. You know,
right,
like he said it over and over again. And I started listening to Rogan in 2010. And people think I'm bullshit when I say this, but he changed my life. He absolutely changed my life. Like, I was already a driven, motivated, committed type of person anyways, but he took it to another level. He allowed me, same with Ron Paul, like all of these people were mentors and leaders in my life that allowed me to take who I am to another level. He to a large extent allowed me to dream again. He allowed me to dream bigger, to think of like the impossible, to think that I could have, that I could now be personal friends with someone who I idolized, and Dave Smith is completely beyond the pale ridiculous. I never thought it would be a possibility, and now we're genuinely friends. It's bizarre. The fact that I get to talk about the thing I'm most passionate about, which is liberty, and I get to do it, and I get to get paid a little bit of money for it. Like, this is fucking insane. But these are the things that these guys, if you really take it to heart and you have the ability and the drive and the faith in yourself, I mean, you can really accomplish amazing things. And I'm so appreciative. And this is why I tweet so often about Joe Rogan. And people probably think I'm just trying to play the algos to go viral, because there's been nothing but viral tweets about Rogan lately. But It's the truth. Like, he is very important. He is so important to young men. Jordan Peterson is so important to young men and young women if they're open to his message. These people are responsible for course correcting so many young men's lives. And that is really foundationally vital to a society and a civilization. And it's like, people should not want these people canceled. I cannot tell you how much worse off we'd be without them.
And what's funny is that like I love Jordan Peterson. I love Rogan. I love Dave. But like, the reason why there was such a demand from people, not even just men, but from people for the kind of things that they bring to the table, I think is another like way that the church has just fallen so short, like so off the mark.
Yeah.
And it's connected to why, like all this stuff's connected. Like, if you're not teaching people to live in a way where they exude personal responsibility, where they you know, where they go out there and they don't like where you follow the teachings of Christ because you feel convicted of them, because you see their worth, and not just because you memorized verses in Sunday school. You know what I mean? Right. Like, the church is just it's so screwed up. I mean, it's just this in a lot of ways the church has just become a poor imitation of the state. You know what I mean? It's state, but done on a like a I don't know. It's like, it's kind of like when you have
without the power and the free,
right?
The free money.
Exactly. State without the power, but like it's like a grift. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like unfortunately, it's a grift for a lot of pastors
There's a less negative way of viewing this too, is that because so many people have fallen away from religion, people like Peterson and Rogan and others, they just reached people where they were. You know, they delivered kind of an agnostic take on religious teachings, and they still talked about many of the foundational principles of religion, but they did it in a way that wasn't like, you have to believe. I think that's where someone who's a libertarian like myself, I'm very put off by, you know, real devoutly religious people where it's like, the only salvation is this path. And I don't like that. I don't like when people talk to me like that, even if you're right. Like, just don't talk to me like that. It pushes me away instantaneously, like knee-jerk reaction. I'm like, get out of my face. So the fact that Rogan and Peterson were just like, these are how I did it, you know? And if you want to, you can do it like this too. And I mean, obviously Peterson goes a little bit further and he says like, you have a duty and a responsibility. And so, but maybe I was more open to it by then. I don't know. I don't know what it was, but everyone gets reached in their own time and their own place. And these guys also made it much more convenient in that you were able to just download it to your phone and do it while you're at the gym or walking to work or whatever. And it's like, these are more convenient ways of receiving religious text.
Yeah,
but not with the religious text nature to it.
And I would even like where I might slightly disagree with what you said is when you say like, and I get what you're saying, like even I have that psychological pushback because I'm a libertarian. And it's like, I hate being told what to do. But it's like, I think the problem is most of us are willing to change our mind and admit we're wrong and do something if we're convinced that what we're doing is wrong. And the problem is too much of Christianity has become a, like, you know, just do it because we say so. It's authoritarianism, like, personified in a lot of ways.
Don't tell me this is the only path. Show me why.
Exactly. You know? And it's like, you know, if the most convincing argument you can give someone for why they should do something is like, because I told you to, which is like, it's why I mean,
gonna work.
No,
not with me.
This is why, like, I have three kids and a fourth on the way, and I practice peaceful parenting, and I practice like talking with my kids, reasoning with them, even when they haven't learned to reason yet. It's like, I'm always pushing them to get there because it's like, I'm never going to be the parent that's just like, oh, do it because I told you to.
Sure.
It's like,
that's
and
beautiful.
even insofar as the Bible would say that God, you know, that like maybe
he
there
commands.
Is some truth to that. Like, he does command you to do something. But God doesn't command you to do things that are arbitrary. Like, I said this is wrong and right because, and I have no reasons except that, like, it was a whim. Like, no, there are actual, and like Jordan Peterson does a great job of this. And it's like, Jordan Peterson is doing what the church has failed, which is like, hey, let's examine the things the Bible talks about, examine these stories, examine why the Bible says this is wrong and this is right. And Jordan Peterson would be like, well, when we look at this from a scientific view, a psychological view, a narrative view, oh, hey, these things actually do end up not being good for your well-being or for society's well-being over the long run.
It's perfect. Yeah. Because he took religious ideology and he pushed it into the practical realm of like, this is actually what it does. Like if you actually live this way, it will give you a better life. And that's how you sell someone on something.
He revitalized the praxeology. Praxis. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the church has just become about like, there's no praxis other, like, or it's like, there's no depth to it. It's just a, like, just do the rituals and go through it and go to heaven. And
right. It's just like how the government dealt with lockdowns. It's carrot and stick. It's like, well, you get heaven or you get hell. And when people talk to me like that, I just go, shove it up your ass. I'm not listening to you. Like, you don't have that authority over me. I have to believe in your authority. Even the religious people tend to believe that. Like, you have to believe, right? That for him to have the authority. I mean, certainly some religious people believe that he is the highest authority, and it doesn't matter whether or not you believe. I personally think that, like, if I'm going to put someone above myself, I have to, or something above myself, I have to believe in it. It's the same way I do with liberty. Like, I believe that this is bigger than me. I believe that the world and people on the aggregate matter more than me on the individual basis. And I'm willing to sacrifice myself to make sure that people are free on this planet, because it's such a rare and beautiful experience. And I'm so grateful to have had it that, like, this is what I value more than anything. I think that these are all lessons that carry tremendous power and weight, and young men in particular are drawn to them. If you can reach them in a way that, like, shows them the beauty in it and shows them that, like, this, not only can this be a better life, but it's a more meaningful one. I think that's a really important thing and something that we lack tremendously. So I'm grateful that these people exist, and I will fight like hell to make sure that they still have a capacity to get their message out there.
The other Jordan Peterson role that comes to mind that was kind of like the last thing I wanted to maybe touch on. I forget the exact phrase of it, but it was just kind of like, if you see a cat on the street, stop to pet it or something like that. And it's like one of these like weird rules that's just like, what? But it's, you know, and this kind of relates to, you know,
stop
what you
to
do.
Smell over the roses.
Yeah. And it kind of relates to what you do over at like the Tower Power Hour, which is like, at some point we have to also like, these things are serious, but if we live our life completely serious and we don't stop to have fun, if we don't try to find ways to, and it's like it shouldn't have to be hard. Like we should be able to enjoy what we are doing and make what we are and try to make what we are doing attractive to people, because they see that like it matters and these people are having fun doing it. Like they're not going to be, even if we're right and our arguments are good, if they look at us like, oh, these people are miserable, they're just always cranky and pissed off, and it's just like they're not going to want to come hang out with us. Whereas like, you know, when I go to Mises Caucus event, when I watch Tower Power Hour or you know, any of like, you know, our kind of like broader group of people's conversations and stuff, like we talk about serious stuff, but we also are trying to have, you know, fun or trying to,
enjoy life.
Make what we're, enjoy what we are doing. And, there's something to be like, I almost feel like sometimes that's a more important piece than we give it credit for.
You're so right. Because
that's how people, like a lot of people do not, just like from first principles, reason their way into beliefs. You know what I mean? Most people don't. A lot of people, it's like they get caught up like either the charisma of somebody or like the cadence of how somebody said something or just the energy of a conversation or a group of people. And that is what brings them in.
Why Trump was a phenomenon. This is why I think that it's really important that not only do we live out our principles, but we live them in a way that is, you know, actually what I believe is the truth of it, which is, when you live a honest and free lifestyle, you have a better time than anybody. Like I really enjoy my life. I have a ton of fun. And I think people sense that about me. Like I go, when I go to these conventions and I see people, I'm so happy to meet them. And I give people big hugs and everyone's just so, it's like, it's such a cool community vibe and it's all genuine. Like none of what I'm doing is contrived. I really, really appreciate the people that listen to my show and they share it and they're fans of mine. I'm fans of them. Like this is all kind of a network effect, a beautiful thing. And with Tower Gang, it's the same way, you know, like Liberty Lockdown is a very serious venue. And I talk about really dark stuff because I think it's very important and it doesn't get discussed enough. That being said, I don't wake up every day and just, you know, fret. like it would be, why would I even exist at that point? It would just be so dark and depressing. So yeah, I woke up and I watched a couple football games and I'll go on Tower Gang and listen to Cole say the N-word a bunch of times, like way too many times. And like this is what I actually enjoy doing. And I go to the gym and I work out and I have a great relationship. And all these things are like, this is what make a well-rounded person. And if you're trying to attract people to a belief system, you have to demonstrate that it's like, it's an actual enjoyable experience, because otherwise why should they do it? Like, and why would I want to sell it? If I thought it was miserable, I wouldn't want to bring people into it. Like I have to be a believer too. And it has to actually work on the back end. So the people that are really miserable, like the woke libertarian types, you're not attracting anybody with that shit. The only people you're attracting are other miserable people that aren't going to fucking produce anything with their lives either. So I'm not interested. Like when people go, oh, we can't have this fissure, this division. It's like, I don't care. If you're a really miserable person, just get the fuck out. I don't need you in my sphere. Like I'm trying to do positive shit in my life. So if you're just there to talk about representation and racism and make everyone feel bad about existing, whatever. It's a waste of time. I don't even want, and I won't be involved if you're there. So, you know, kick rocks.
Well, and part of the problem here, David brings up a good point here, you know, saying like, you know, needing people that are stable and have their lives in order and stuff. And, you know, bringing up Vermin, and then he, you know, said like, it's the JP quote, clean your room. Yep. Part of the problem with these people you mentioned is that like, I feel like they don't have their lives in order. No. And like, this is all they have.
Look at Waldenberger.
Yeah. It's like, and they are not the people I want out there on the front lines. You know what I mean? It's like they should be, you know, yeah, sort your own shit out and figure out your life and how to be a happy, productive member of the human race and not like a killjoy. And, exactly. And then maybe we can talk about you getting involved and being productive. You know what I mean?
A lot of people think I'm an FBI agent because I didn't start talking about this shit until my late 30s. But the reason I didn't is because my room wasn't made yet, because I was working on getting financial freedom and emotional well-being and therapy. And I was doing all of these things to make myself a more well-rounded person, to get to a position of feeling as if I can speak to other people with some level of authority, with some level of commanding respect. I now have that. So when the opportunity arose and the lockdowns happened, I felt compelled. It wasn't even like, oh, I expected people to pay attention to me or whatever. It was just like, I'm going to do this because I have to, because I have a calling right now, because there's no one that's vocalizing the amount of concern that's necessary in this moment. So I responded like that. But David's exactly right. If you are in a position of still trying to figure out who you are in life, you shouldn't be telling people how to live. I mean, just being honest, like you're still working on yourself. Like, and I'm not even saying I'm trying to tell people how to live, but I'm saying this is what I do. So if you think that my life is something that you would like to emulate, you're capable of it. So now go out and do it. Like if you're a 21-year-old who's trying to tell people what's wrong with their lives or how to live, and you're, you know, living at home with your parents, you're paycheck to paycheck or you're unemployed, it's like, well, why should you expect people to listen to you? So I really am a huge believer in like not just only speaking once you're in that position, but also only listen to people that are really in that position. Because otherwise you're just hoping that they're right.
Right. It's just like when the Libertarian Party or people like Archie and others like you know, tell Dave, well, you're not going to attract a lot of people with these offensive things you do. And it's just like Dave has like a, you know, like 100,000, like several hundred thousand following, and you have like 400 followers on Twitter. He has like Dave Smith,
and
Dave
all of them are following you because they hate what you have to say.
Right. And like like Tom Woods and Dave Smith combined have more appeal than like the LNC and all the state affiliates combined. It's like, so if we're going to talk about who can attract people and who knows what they're doing here, It's really a contest.
It's hilarious. I mean, it's hilarious. And these people, they have no authority. They know they have none. And this is why they're so desperate. I mean, I honestly believe that all of their anger comes from a place of insecurity. Their ideas don't hold up. Who they are doesn't hold up against Dave or myself or any of these people. Like, they can't fuck with us. Like, just being blunt, they can't. They have no way of beating us on anything other than saying, you're racist and therefore I'm better. I mean, that's it. That's their entire defense. So if you just discount that, if you just disregard it, it's like, okay, now you see what this is. You see a bunch of dysfunctional people that are, you know, needing fundraising to deal with their lifestyle. And it's like, and honestly, like, everyone gets down on their luck. I'm not even trying to shame the guy. I'm just saying, shut the fuck up. Don't talk about me. Don't talk about any of us. If your life is in disarray, don't talk about us. Like, that's really as simple as it can get. But apparently that makes me an asshole. So whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jesus was often accused of being a bit of an asshole.
Yes.
Not to compare you to Jesus, but no, I mean,
please, please do. I'm obviously Jesus-like.
But, but no, seriously, like, I mean, it just always makes me laugh when, and I get this from other Christians too, where they're just like, oh, you're out there, you're misrepresenting Jesus because you're so brash and the crowd you run with. And, you know, and I'm just like, you know, this Jesus was this mofo who, like, literally chased people out of the whips, chased people out of the temple with whips,
right?
Because of, like, they were exchanging money. And I mean, like, and there's a reason why it was a big deal, but, like, it wasn't even like he was, like, there was, like, you know, violence going on. It wasn't like he was protecting somebody who was being attacked. It was like, you know, something was going on that was, like, you know, a problem for him, and he chased them out, you know, with, like, I mean, flipping tables. I've literally had people try to explain to me how it wasn't bombastic or brash for Jesus to use whips to chase people out of a temple. And I'm just like, well, you can say that, but then, like, words have no meaning anymore. Like,
it is, literally, it would be.
Yeah. Just like,
yeah. Well, see, I don't have any, because I'm not a believer, you know, those to me are allegories. They're stories. I don't have any idea if they're true. However, I think that, you know, there's a compelling argument to be made that perhaps I should be, less brash, and perhaps I should be more Christ-like and calm and peaceful and loving and overtly so and accepting and forgiving and all these things. But I'm flawed and I'm human and I do my best.
But I think the goal is not to, like, you don't want to be harmless. You know what I mean? And this is something that Jordan Peterson is good
Jordan
about
Peterson,
too.
Yeah.
And it's like, what you want
be
to
a
do
monster.
You want to integrate that, like, that shadow. You know what I mean?
Right.
And Jesus was not a harmless person. He was an integrated person.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of the time he was patient with people. He didn't get bombastic. He didn't, you know, even when people were, like, even with, like, sinners, even with, like, prostitutes and tax collectors, he would sit down with them. He'd have conversations with them, meet them where they were at. We should do that. But there's also times, like, when Jesus was faced with the Pharisees, or when Jesus saw the corruption of what was going on in the temple with the money changers and stuff, where you go, all right, enough's enough. And you unleash that shadow.
Believe me,
what you need to do is know when
down.
To use both. Yeah. The wisdom comes
to
know.
I got that part down.
Right. And then with time, you learn the wisdom to know when to, you know, when's the right situation to unleash it and when isn't. So,
and
but yeah, you're right. No one's going to get it perfect.
I've gotten much better at it. I mean, I'm telling you, in my 20s, I had such a short fuse, but, you know, now I'm 39. I'm a so much more loving, forgiving version of myself than I once was. And I'm still far from probably where I'll ultimately end up. But
you know, doesn't forgiveness mean more? Like, some people, this is my last thing here. Like, sometimes people get really, like, especially some of my atheist friends, get really triggered at the idea of a God that sends people to hell or a God that's wrathful. And I'm just like, for me, it's kind of an amazing thing, because it's like, it makes the forgiveness mean more. Like, if someone's weak and just has no backbone to them, no anger to them, like, nothing, and then you do something horrible to them and they forgive you, it's just like, well, they're just being a doormat. You know what I mean? Like, it's not really impressive. Whereas if, like, you know what I mean? Like, now if spit in the face of Joe Rogan and he gives me a hug and just like, I don't know why you did that, buddy, but I love you and I hope you Hope things go better for you.
Yeah, that ain't happening unless he's high on DMT at the time.
But I'm just, you know what I mean? Like, forgiveness means a lot more when it comes from somebody who has the ability to unleash hell.
Exactly.
Because not to.
It'd be like if you upset both Archie and I, and Archie forgave you and I forgave you, and then people would be like, oh, you're the same. No, people would look at it and be like, oh, no, Clint's forgiveness means something because he could actually defend himself. Archie would be like,
I respect Archie more if he didn't forgive. You know what I mean? Like, be like, oh, have backbone, man. Like, you know,
just hold it against him forever. No, you're totally right. I mean, this is why I lived. This is why I've trained in the past. Is like, I think that it's really important that we be a meaningful foe. I mean, you're up against the biggest state in human history. Like, if you're just gonna talk your way through this, good fucking luck. Like, you have to, like, ultimately my interest is in peace, and it is speaking peace into existence. However, the only reason someone's going to listen to me is if I'm a danger, and a real one. And people don't like it when I talk about that either, but it's all fucking obviously true. So I don't understand why people go, oh, that's Fed posting. No, it's fucking reality. Like, if you're not a meaningful threat to the state, they're going to run you over. That's a fucking fact of history that everyone knows it. So I'm not going to pretend like I'm not. Like, I am trying to be dangerous. I am trying to earn the respect of fucking tyrants. So, like, I'm going to be as dangerous as I have to be, and then I'm going to pray to the end of my days for peace. So that's kind of how I try and mold myself, and I wish more people would, because if you're just going to be some fucking soft, pudgy bitch sitting on the couch and expect the government to back off, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah. No, I mean, the pinned tweet on my Twitter. I mean, you know, another example of Jesus being, you know, pretty bold, you know, is the story when Satan offered Jesus all the kingdoms. He'd brought up on high mountain and said, look, all the kingdoms of the world, and they're mine to give to you. And Jesus rebuked him and said, like, just get behind me. Like, you know, it wasn't lukewarm. It wasn't like, you know, you have to take a stand. You have to be strong. Yeah. There's no pussyfooting around this kind of shit. So we have to,
and you can't just do that with physical strength either. You need financial strength too, because like when they come, they're going to come with financial imperatives and drivers. Look at exactly what they've done with these vax passes, where they're trying to strip you of your fucking employment. It's not an accident. It's not a mistake. They know that that's the easiest way to undercut otherwise principled people, because they know that you are paycheck to paycheck, and you can't defend yourself if you can't feed your family. So you have to get in a better position to be able to stand up.
Absolutely true. Yep. Hey, Clint, I really appreciate you coming on.
It was a blast,
great conversation. Big fan of yours and your podcast. And definitely want to do it again sometime. I feel like most of my audience probably follows you, but for some of my, you know, more Christian my Christian brethren, if you don't know your stuff as well, plug your shit before we get out of here.
If you don't mind the profanity, those Christians out there, check out at Liberty Lock Pod on Twitter and Liberty Lockdown Podcast. You can just search Liberty Lockdown on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, all over the place. And thank you so much for having me on, man. It was a blast.
Yeah, of course. And for those watching, if you haven't followed me yet, at Biblical Anarchy on Twitter, and same as Clint, I'm on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, all the stupid. There's apps I've never even heard of that my podcast is on. So
exactly,
feel free to give it a follow. And you know, if you want to support the project, Patreon.com/Biblical Anarchy. So thanks everybody for watching, and until next time, don't fear the fire.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.